Господин Исус, водите ви, уявление подсъмнение, не посещи се на ради, пускайте да изотаем. Он е тъменен до ся, зелен за нас лакая, чаксу си лакам зеле, казва и сви гребенева. Свите и тъня му любистам, стъпитам се на путеле, саям и покадам аям на дати са пенантикам. Вън се копа тугас чак, крепесен на бъйвате, петитрам и пабенебил, байсалебил. Balaram's visit to Vrindavan. The very wonderful human-like activities of the Supreme Personality of Godhead and his expansion, Balaram. So first, Balaram, due to his expertise and of course his potency, he satisfied the residents of Vrindavan and brought them many messages from Krishna. So he pacified them, and he stayed for several months in Vrindavan. We'll read from Krishna's book, and then we'll hear about Balaram's own pastimes in Vrindavan. Lord Balaram, of course, could understand the ecstatic feelings of the gopis, and therefore he wanted to pacify them. He was expert in presenting an appeal, and thus, treating the gopis very respectfully, he began to narrate the stories of Krishna so tactfully that the gopis became satisfied. To keep the gopis in Vrindavan satisfied, Lord Balaram stayed there continuously for 2 months, namely the months of Chaitra, March and April, and Vaishak, April, May. So March to the end of May. And now what month are we? In July. So Balaram is not there in this month. For those 2 months, he kept himself amongst the gopis, and he passed every night with them in the forest of Vrindavan to satisfy their desires for conjugal love. Thus Balaram also enjoyed the rasa dance with the gopis during those 2 months. But it is carefully mentioned by our acharyas that Balaram had his own gopis. He didn't enjoy with Krishna's gopis. So this is so mysterious. Of course the activities of the unlimitedly all-powerful Supreme Lord must by definition be mysterious, because if they were common, if they were the activities that anyone and everyone could perform, and everyone and everyone do perform, then what would be the use of him being the Supreme Personality of Godhead if he didn't do something exceptionally wonderful? But when the Supreme Lord, who is unlimitedly powerful, etc., performs activities that are human-like, appearing to be the kind of activities that human beings would perform, one wonders, naturally, what is impelling him or motivating him to act in this way. So to understand the motivating force of someone, what is pushing them from within, is always very difficult, because people will be outside, they're doing something, but inside, the thing that is driving or pushing their actions may be completely different. Someone may be very, very nice on the outside, and inside he's planning to steal their money or something like that. Or someone may be very hard on the outside, and one could be very soft on the inside. Or one could be very soft on the outside and soft on the inside, both. So it is actually very difficult. Or when someone's doing business, with someone else. They're always very, very, very nice. But what's on the inside is not being nice, it's how to make a profit. So there's a difference between what's on the inside and what's on the outside, generally. So Balaram is dancing with his own gopis. This is also described in the 34th chapter of the 10th canto, when Krishna and Balaram are celebrating holy festival in the middle of the forest, and also it's elaborately described by Kavi Kanapur in Ananda Vrindavan Champu. There's a whole description of the holy festival and how the, you know, really, really ecstatic, and they're taking balls of colors and throwing at each other, and the teams of the different gopis are trying to defeat the teams of Krishna, Balaram, and they're doing different things, and then in the midst of that, so Balaram at that time has his gopis and Krishna has his gopis, and during the midst of all this, one asura named Sankarchuda, who was an associate of Kuvera, he comes into the scene, and he sees this beautiful young boy dancing with all these exquisitely beautiful young girls, and what does he think? Being naturally, what does an asura think? What is the meaning of being asura? He's bahimukh. Bahimukh means what? No. That would be more bahu. What is by here?
Outside.
So his back. So his back is to Krishna. That's what it means to be an asura. His face is from Krishna. His back is facing Krishna. So this is the consciousness of everyone in the material world. They have their backs to Krishna, which is very impolite to place one's back. So we should always be careful of that. It's hard to do it because Krishna is everywhere. Here, especially. Even in the wall. But to have our back to Krishna, not facing him, not having our consciousness directed towards him, is asuric or demonic. So when one is facing Krishna, it means that one is acknowledging Krishna's position as the Supreme Lord, and ourselves, our own position as insignificant, tiny servants of Krishna. And as you were mentioning today, what Prabhupada said, that Krishna is the Supreme Lord, Nityo Nityanam, Chaitanya Chaitanananam, that he is the one that is nourishing and supplying food for everyone. He's maintaining everyone. So he's so powerful that every living entity, from the amoeba to the bird to the frogs who, due to all the rain, have started their croaking out in the back, he's maintaining them. And he's also maintaining the snakes, who are very happy when the frogs start croaking because now they know where they are so that they can eat them.
But they're all sleeping with
them.
Huh?
They're all sleeping with
them. They've
who?
The snakes.
When they hear the frogs, they wake up. That's like their alarm clock, maybe. It's time to eat. So, in any case, this all-powerful Supreme Lord, when we face him, acknowledging our position in relationship to him, that is the natural consciousness of the soul. And when Jiva Sarupoi, Krishna Nitya Das, and to turn our back on Krishna is the unnatural consciousness. It's asuric, it's demonic. So this Sankarchuda, not wishing to face Krishna, turned his back on Krishna and thought, why should these gopis be dancing with Krishna? They're so young and beautiful. Who is the best person for them to be dancing with? It's me. And his quality was that he was proud. because he had some special jewel in the shape of a shank, kans, and he was, because of his pride, he was envious. So pride and envy, arrogance and envy, go hand in hand, and they are part of the demonic mentality of having our backs or someone's back turned towards Krishna. So of course the gopis, he tried to take, to drive the gopis northward, and the gopis cried out to Krishna for help, and Balaram for help. So immediately Krishna started chasing him with a big log in his hand, and the demon Asura saw Krishna chasing him. He decided it was best if he left as quickly as possible. But regardless of how quickly he wanted to leave, because the Asuric mentality is a bluff, ultimately, because we may think that we can have our back to Krishna, we may proudly think that we're so powerful, and we may be envious of Krishna's position, but it's not, it's far from reality. It's illusion. Krishna is all powerful, and everyone in he's unlimitedly powerful, and everyone in relationship to him is unlimitedly weak, and also dependent fully on him. So when Krishna came towards the demon to protect the Sankachuda, to protect the gopis, he ran. Sankachuda ran away, and Krishna followed him, placing the gopis in the care of Balaram to protect them. And then he chased after Sankachuda, and just with one punch smashed him, killed him, and took the jewel, gave the jewel, his valuable jewel, he gave it to Balaram, his elder brother. Balaram gave it to Maru Mangal, and then Maru Mangal fulfilled the desire of Krishna, the actual desire of Krishna, by giving the jewel to Srimati Radharani. So Balaram at that time was dancing with his own gopis. So at this time, when Krishna, when Balaram came to Vrindavan, he was also dancing with his own gopis and satisfied them. He satisfied them in a wonderful way. So he's acting as if he's a human being, or we could say that human beings act more accurately as if they are gods. They are God. So we say that Krishna performs his Naralila in Vrindavan, his Lila that mimics the activities of men. But actually, in this world, we are trying to perform Godly Lila, Ishwara Lila. But the difference is, when Krishna acts in his way, everything he does is successful. And ultimately, when we act in our way, because we're imitating the Supreme Lord, everything that we do is ultimately unsuccessful, because we're only imitations. We're imitation Ishwaras. We're imitation Supreme Lords. And therefore, the demonic mentality is Ishwaraham, aham bhogi. Because unless one is Ishwara, unless one can control, one can't enjoy. So what happens in this world is that everyone, being imitation Ishwaras, they make some little kingdom that they can control, or imagine that they're in control of. But they always end up serving in that kingdom when they think they're the controller. And different than that is the transcendental autocrat. Krishna, who always gets his own way. He always does what he wants, but what does he want to do? He's bhakta vatsala atma pujanta vadanyata. He gives himself to his devotees and serves them. So that's actually what he wants, the Supreme Lord. So how is unlimitedly powerful Balaram going to act in Vrindavan? How is he going to act? How does he enjoy? And what is motivating him? So we know what motivates the demonic, because that's described in the Bhagavad Gita, and we see it in the qualities of someone like Sankachuda and on And sometimes we even may see it sometimes lurking within our own hearts. But it's pride and envy, and born out of that is all the rest of lust, anger, greed, illusion, kam, krodh, lobh, mada, moha, matsarja, all the different demonic elements that are sitting within the lower parts of the consciousness. This is what's actually there for a conditioned soul. That's what drives us and pushes us. The illusory desire, that's what's driving the whole engine, this pride and envy. Envy of Krishna, pride, thinking I can do it, I can, why does he enjoy? I can enjoy. That's what's driving the whole consciousness in its different forms of a conditioned soul. But Krishna, he's not an imitation God, he is God. So what's driving him? What drives him to act in the way he does? It's very mysterious. People go to psychiatrists and psychologists, and they talk and talk and talk, and they try to find out what's driving the people, what's pushing them to act in the peculiar ways that they act. Very, very difficult to understand, other than on a general level, like we're talking about, what's driving even someone like me or a person in this world. But what is driving Krishna? What makes him act in the way he does? And what drives him, there's of course different levels to look at it, is one, he is the Purushottama, he is the Supreme Person, and he is the Supreme Enjoyer. So naturally he wants to enjoy, he's the predominating enjoyer. He predominates over everyone at all times. And the living entity is the predominated enjoyer. Our happiness comes by giving pleasure to the supreme enjoyer. So what is driving him on one level, Krishna, on one level, is it's completely his nature to enjoy existence. All existence is meant for his pleasure. So how do you feel when you hear that? When you hear that all existence is meant for his pleasure, how do you feel?
Shocked.
We feel just like Sankarachuda felt. Why does he get to enjoy all the time? How about me? I mean, I should be, all existence is meant for my pleasure. This is the illusion, the illusory bubble that we live in continuously, whether we don't admit it, of course, because it sounds so ridiculous and absurd when it comes out of my mouth, that all existence is meant for my pleasure. I mean, no one will believe me if I say that. Everyone will think that I'm mad. I'm crazy. But this is how everyone, practically speaking, acts and thinks. Maybe not acts all the time, but this is what's going on in the polluted consciousness of a conditioned soul, just like Sankarachuda. And just like, Sankarachuda, he's a good one.
It's like when you walk into a mall, right? There's so many shops, there's so many items.
People. When we look at people as items too.
Yeah, and you just go through and you just see if there's anything that you
can. Yeah, what you do is one takes the enjoying spirit and it comes out of his consciousness and touches the different items there, seeing which ones are pleasurable or not. And according to the particular body and mentality, different items will be pleasurable, or appear to them pleasurable.
They're meant to be for me to buy and enjoy.
Well, that's why to be Ishwar you need Shakti, and Shakti means Lakshmi. She's the prime Shakshmi. So without Shakti, you can't enjoy. You can't be Ishwara. But the point being, this is the this is what's going on in every conditioned soul's consciousness. It sounds so absurd. All existence is meant for me to enjoy. And advertising people, and they learn how to present things in such a way to bring out the enjoying spirit of everyone. So that you can think that if you buy this, if you put yourself in this situation, if you take this vacation, if you have this car or this jewelry, then you will really enjoy. So it's just a bluff to separate people from their money so that the people who are selling it can enjoy, so that they have the power to enjoy. Because then, but because the tendency of the conditioned soul is to think all the material existence is meant for my enjoyment. So that has two parts, ichcha and dvesha. I want this, I don't want that. Pulling and pushing. Sankalpa, vikalpa, accepting and rejecting in the category of the consciousness of enjoyment or non-enjoyment. We have different categories in our mind. This is enjoyable, this is non-enjoyable. So the consciousness goes out, it touches some sense object, and if it is placed in the category of non-enjoyable, it's pushed away. If it's placed in the category of enjoyable, we enjoy it mentally for a while, and if we don't have the price to pay for it, then we put it back on the shelf and look for something else. But all we do this tasting and testing continuously. And you know, you walk in the mall, and then we look at all the people. We start examining, oh, this one's fat, this one's skinny, this one's this, look at how funny one, this one, look, this one's old, this one's young. But it's really the same thing that's going on. It's like the consciousness taking people and putting them in the different categories. This one's attractive, this one's not, I'll reject this one, I'll accept. But it's just all in the mind. It's just completely living in this dream of the enjoyer, this envious dream of that all in existence is meant for me. So when Balaram enjoys, what's driving him? It's not false ego, it's real ego that he's the enjoyer. But who is he going to enjoy with? He's going to enjoy not with those souls who are in the opposite mood of all material existence is meant for my enjoyment, but he's going to enjoy with those who are in the cooperative mood of all in existence is meant for your enjoyment, Balaram, and I'm the predominated enjoyer, and let me act in such a way that you'll enjoy. So it's they're not thinking, let me act in such a way, not in such a gross way all the time, as that, but for instance, when he has his gopis, they're dressing in such a way that that Balaram will be pleased. They act in such a way. Some of them act in a very, very contrary way. They have bhaumabhav. Some of them act in a very pleasing way. They speak in a way. They sing in a way, and they have different qualities, and all these different qualities are they're gifted with those qualities so that they can be used for the pleasure of Krishna or Balaram, for example. So there are different rasas where one can enter into, and loving exchanges where they can give Krishna enjoyment. And this is the natural consciousness of every living entity. Not material existence is meant for my pleasure, but everything in existence is meant for Krishna. And I'm existing, and I'm also meant for Krishna. I'm a part of Krishna, just like the material energy is a part of Krishna, but the material energy is an unconscious part of Krishna, except in Goloka Vrindavan. I'm a separated conscious part of Krishna, and all meant for Krishna's pleasure. So what gives Krishna pleasure is when something, because how do you give pleasure to someone who is all powerful, who's all knowing, and he's all beautiful. How do you give him pleasure? He owns everything in existence. It's all his energy. So how to give him pleasure? By offering things with bhakti, with devotion. That's how to give him pleasure. Because it's the devotion that things are offered that give him pleasure. So the key to understanding what we will hear now, although it sounds like human beings imitating Balaram, but it's actually Balaram who's the reality. It almost sounds like Saturday Night in the Forest, something like that. But it's not. But this is what happens. So human beings are imitating Balaram all the time, Krishna and Balaram. So moonlight filled the sky and spread everywhere, and thus the banks of the Jamuna appeared very bright and pleasing, and Lord Balaram enjoyed the company of the gopis there. So all the gopis, his own gopis, and Balaram went out in the middle of the night while the moon was full, and it spread everywhere. The demigod known as Varuna sent his daughter, whose name was Varuni, in the form of liquid honey oozing from the hollows of the trees. And because of this honey, the whole forest became aromatic, and the sweet aroma of the liquid honey, Varuni, captivated Balaramji. Balaramji and all the gopis became very much attracted by the taste of the Varuni, and all of them drank it together. And while drinking this natural beverage, all the gopis chanted the glories of Lord Balaram. And Lord Balaram felt very happy, as if he had become intoxicated by drinking that Varuni beverage. So, as if he became intoxicated by the standards of human beings, we would say that he was acting as if he was intoxicated. But human beings' intoxication are perverted reflections of Balaram's. What does intoxication mean? What does it mean to be intoxicated? Of course, none of you know. But you might have seen walking down the street at one time, seen someone. What does it mean to be intoxicated?
An altered state of mind due to the influence of toxic substances.
That's funny, toxin is in there. The body is becoming poisoned by the toxin and all this. So what's the observable symptoms?
Loss of consciousness.
Loss.
So people get very frivolous and sort of laugh a lot.
Not your normal self.
Not your normal self. You can see things in a funny way. You lose your bodily coordination.
Lose
talk in a funny way even, huh?
Lose your inhibitions.
Yeah.
Everything seems to be sort of moving.
And then the next day you feel miserable and terrible. That Balaram, because it's imitation. They're imitating Balaram.
Krishna Balaram learned that when they go to school.
How to make those?
Yeah. Study the effects of intoxication.
What do you think about that? Why do you think they learned that?
Wow. They want to become.
Huh?
Try something
different. Because it's a source of enjoyment.
Yeah.
A materialistic, which is a perverted reflection, they use it as a source of enjoyment.
I thought of another reason. It's my speculation, though. Because they're Kshatriyas. They're warriors. So sometimes someone will come and you have to, you want to loosen him up so he talks. You find out all the plans and everything, get things out of perspective. So you. Anyway, that's what I thought. Because different effects of different ones. In any case, While drinking this natural beverage, all the gopis chanted the glories of Lord Balaram, and Lord Balaram felt very happy. They were chanting his glories, and he felt happy. What do you think about that?
Philatelies. Happy.
I would too.
We do, but we never admit it, right?
Of course.
But he's why is he allowed that chanting his glories? And he became very humble. No, he became very happy because everything was the right perspective. He didn't say no. Yes. Come on. Because he's the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So he's very, very happy, as if he had become intoxicated by drinking that Varuni beverage. His eyes rolled in a pleasing attitude. He was decorated with long garlands of forest flowers, and the whole situation appeared to be a great function of happiness because of this transcendental bliss. It doesn't work when humans do it. But it sure works when Balaram does it, especially in Vrindavan. Lord Balaram smiled beautifully, and drops of perspiration decorating his face appeared to be like soothing morning dew. While Balaram was in that happy mood, he desired to enjoy the company of the gopis in the water of the Yamuna. Therefore he called the Yamuna to come nearby. But the Yamuna neglected the order of Balaramji, considering him intoxicated. Why do I have to listen to this man who's intoxicated? And Lord Balaram didn't become happy. He became very displeased at the Yamuna's neglecting his orders. So he immediately wanted to scratch the land near the Yamuna with his plowshare. Lord Balaram has two weapons, a plow and a club, from which he takes service when they are required. This time he wanted to bring the Yamuna by force, so he took the help of his plow. He wanted to punish the Yamuna because she did not come in obedience to his order. He addressed the Yamuna, "You wretched river, you did not care for my order. Now I shall teach you a lesson. You did not come to me voluntarily. Now with the help of my plow I shall force you to come. I shall divide you into a hundred of scattered streams." Now, an intoxicated person can talk like this and not make any sense, but Balaram is the unlimitedly powerful Supreme Lord, and he has the full power to pull a river to him with his plow. So how does this mix with our usual concept of the Param Ishwara, God? Because how do people usually conceive of God?
Old.
Huh?
Old.
Very old.
Sitting in one place.
He's sitting in one place very, very soberly. Soberly, not intoxicatedly.
Blonde beard.
Blonde or grey?
Grey.
Grey, not blonde.
A Muslim guy.
No.
Of course, God is the oldest, so of course he must shame. Have a beard.
Navio Namja.
But people usually, so they think of like that, and he's sitting on a throne because he's the king. And of course they don't, yeah, this is a very... actually unusual conception of God. I've heard it said that, okay, you think of him old with a beard like that, but how long is his beard? Why does he have a beard? Because he's old. Okay, how old is he? Well, they have an 80-year-old man's beard, but he's not 80 years old. He's not 90 years old. How long should his beard be if he's eternal? I mean, it's got to be unlimitedly long, but they never show that. And he's on a throne. And what is he doing when he's sitting on the throne? He's listening. His only job is to listen to everyone's
complaints and prayers and stuff, give me this and give me that and do that and why you've done that and why.
Giving them what they need, what they ask for.
Yeah, he's up there. He's sitting on his throne and he's
quietly texting on his mobile.
Yeah. Push the enter button.
Human conception of God.
This is idolatry, actually. Mm-hmm. Worshipping false gods, the concept of God. Because, I mean, just what, how boring it would be to be God if all you did was listen to your only, what you did all for all of eternal existence is just listen to everyone's complaints.
And dispense benedictions.
And you know that people are just coming to you because if they don't, they're going to get into trouble and you might do something terrible to them. If you're good, he'll when you come before him, he'll give you what you want. And if you're bad, he's going to really give you a slap and a.
You get angry.
He's getting angry, he'll kill you, put you in hell forever. So you're going to be on your best behavior, but that doesn't bring any love. So therefore, you find these religions, they come up with the highest concept is fear for God, which is good to keep the bad boys in line when they're in school, but if they have enough fear, they keep in line. But this isn't obviously the supreme relationship. This is the king sitting on the throne. This is the king sitting on the throne, the old man with all that power sitting on the throne, that you better be good or else he's going to fix you. He's going to get you. He's going to give you the treatment. But Balaram is, and Krishna, this is when the Supreme Lord is not on his throne at all, but he's playing with his most beloveds. So this is how they're playing. And who is he playing with? The ones who love him. So in the midst of his playing, the all-powerful Lord has a desire. And he wants to play in the water. And somehow or another, the object of his desire doesn't cooperate with him. And he wants to play. And he becomes angry. And he threatens the Yamuna. Now why would this happen in the midst of the spiritual pastimes of Balaram? How is it possible if he's all powerful and all knowing? Why would the all-powerful allow something like this to happen? So one answer, of course, on one level, on a proper tattva level, is that he's the nature of his loving mood compresses his consciousness, so he's not thinking of himself as the Supreme Lord. But when he gets angry, he does. So why is this going to happen? Why does this happen?
Is it maybe to increase his pleasure because, it gets exciting?
Yes. But also because for our benefits, when we're hearing this pastime, we don't think, hey, wait a second. Two wait a seconds. Why this is what I should be doing on a Saturday night. That's the first thing. Or the second one is, why is he doing this? Well, he's God, isn't he? He's supposed to be sitting on his throne. He's supposed to be. So it gives us an opportunity to understand why he's doing it and we're not by the words of Kalindi, who he's threatened. He said. So when the Amuna was threatened like this, she became greatly afraid of the power of Balaram. Because if we did that, if we get upset, if we're trying to enjoy someone, and we say we're going to pull the Swan River over to your house or something like that, people are going to, they'll come with a big net and they'll capture us and lock us up somewhere. But she was very afraid of the power of Balaram and immediately came in person, falling at his lotus feet and praying, "My dear Balaram, you are the most powerful personality." So always in Krishna Lila, we get this mixture of knowledge of someone speaking knowledge of who Krishna is, Krishna and Balaram are, so that we hear it and don't mistake Balaram for an ordinary person for these two reasons. Again, one, we don't become envious of him, and second, we think it's the other side is we think that this is mundane. So you, my dear Balaram, you are the most powerful personality and you are pleasing to everyone. Okay. So when I hear this, my consciousness, after just being envious of Balaram, that he's dancing and enjoying himself like anything, why does he have all the fun and why don't I have to do that? But here's the reason. My dear Balaram, you are the most powerful personality. I'm not the most powerful personality. And you are pleasing to everyone. Later I'll ask everyone if I'm pleasing. So we just hear what Balaram's qualities are and we see that we're not. But unfortunately, I forgot your glorious exalted position, and that's my consciousness. But now I have come to my senses. It means my intelligence has gone proper. I was the one who was intoxicated and I forgot who you were. I didn't see things in the proper perspective. And I remember that you hold all the planetary systems on your head merely by your partial expansion, Shesha. You are the sustainer of the whole universe. So he is acting in this way, and I, trying to imitate him, act in that way, but I can't do anything that he does. His consciousness is so different from mine. All I can be is just like a shadow imitation, and rather than getting happiness, I just get misery. Because it's only a shadow. You are the sustainer of the whole universe. My dear Supreme Personality of Godhead, you are full of six opulences. So therefore, the one who has all the opulences, he's the one who can enjoy. Everyone else is meant to be enjoyed. And I have because I forgot your omnipotence. So this is our situation. We have pride, and we have envy, and because I have forgotten your omnipotence, I have mistakenly disobeyed your order. What a nice prayer. And thus, I have become a great offender. But, my dear Lord, please know that I am a soul surrendered unto you, who are very affectionate to your devotees. Therefore, please excuse my impudence and mistakes, and by your causeless mercy, may you now release me. Because he called for his plow, and he was about to actually do it, pull the river Yamuna there. What a nice prayer. I find that if we read a little slowly, these holy books reveal to us so much. You know, we tend to want to go quickly and, you know, get to the good parts, so to speak, the parts that... But if any part we pick up a holy book anywhere and let our consciousness enter into it, so much wonderful instruction is given to us. And also it is said by Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur that this wasn't the Yamuna, actually. Because the Yamuna is a devotee. And she wouldn't have said that to Balaram. But this is a part of the Yamuna. And this is the Kalindi, who is the wife of the ocean. So it's a portion of the Yamuna's So how did Balaram, who was, he was intoxicated in his own way, he was angry at her, threatening her, and she prayed to him so sweetly, how did he react? Upon displaying this submissive attitude, the Amuna was forgiven. And then when she came nearby, Lord Balaram enjoyed the pleasure of swimming in her waters with the gopis in the same way that an elephant enjoys himself along with as many she elephants. So this is what the Amuna is meant for. This is what we are meant for. This is what everything is meant for, to give pleasure to Balaram. And when one is engaged in his proper way, not in the reflected way, not in the intoxicated way, not in the proud and envious way, but in the proper way, not imagining that we can be the enjoyers, but rather understanding that we can only be enjoyed. When we are engaged in a proper way, then our consciousness blossoms in happiness. So she actually, Yamuna actually, Balaram enjoyed the pleasure of swimming in her waters along with the gopis. So how wonderful it is when we can give pleasure to Krishna. Because again, he's unlimitedly powerful, he can do anything. So he doesn't need us to get his pleasure, but it's we who need to have the mentality to give pleasure to him. And then when we have that mentality, and not only have the mentality, but act on it, and actively try to give pleasure to him, like the Amuna did, provide that facility for his pleasure, then that brings such happiness to the consciousness, because it's completely natural. That's going samuk from bahyamuk. So after a long time, when Balaram had enjoyed to his full satisfaction, what a nice concept that Balaram enjoyed to his full satisfaction. And the Amuna, and what speak of his gopis and the Vrindavan forest, had the facility to give Balaram enjoyment to his full satisfaction. How nice. So what did Balaram do after he enjoyed, after a long time, because he has a great ability to enjoy? Then he came out of the water. And immediately, a goddess of fortune offered him a nice blue garment and a valuable necklace made of gold. So this is super mundane. It is beyond the mundane realm, so we cannot penetrate into it unless we are on this platform. But at least we should know that this is not ordinary. This is most extraordinary. So what color were the garment that the goddess of fortune gave? And what else did she give? A valuable necklace made of gold. So Balaram's complexion was whitish, and he was wearing bluish garments and a golden necklace. So then Balaram, after bathing in the Amuna, Lord Balaram, dressed in blue garments and decorated with golden ornaments, looked very attractive to everyone. Lord Balaram's complexion is white. When he was properly dressed, he looked exactly like the white elephant of King Indra in the heavenly planets. And that the river Yamuna still has many small branches due to being scratched by the plowshare of Balaram, Lord Balaram. Did you see those? The branches? I couldn't see them. In Ramagat. Have you been to Ramagat?
Ramagat.
No, this is where this took place, in Ramagat.
So
It goes, it turns abruptly. It goes like this. Yamuna goes like this. Just in Ramagat. It takes a, it goes, I think, to the north or something. It's going in one direction, and then in that place, it just goes. Makes a big, big turn. So all these branches of the river Yamuna still glorify the omnipotence of Lord Balaram. So what does omnipotence mean?
Possessing multipotencies.
Yeah, all powerful. Yes. So because he's all powerful, he is can enjoy completely. According to one's power, potency, one can enjoy. So our fault is that we are tiny, insignificant, but we try to imagine ourselves as all powerful, and therefore we're in such a frustrating situation. Because you need power to control, and you need to control to enjoy. So we neither have the power, so we can't control, and therefore we're stuck being frustrated.
It's like if you come to Jagrupa came with a book of all the things you can do in Perth, a booklet and a pamphlet with pictures, told you all these things, and you look through it, I like to do that, I like to do this, I like to do that, and then it costs, you know, $25 for a ticket, $50 for this. You can fly in a helicopter over the top of Perth, it only costs you $260, you know, each thing, and the power isn't there. And so then you flip through the book and say, okay, that's very nice, and then do nothing. Because you haven't got the power, as you're saying, to enjoy.
Because you need power, you need to control. And without any control, you can't enjoy. Yeah. So then you think, well, let me use my time and energy to get the shakti, power. Power means shakti. Yeah. So that means you. That's why people are interested in accumulating money, because money means power.
Yeah. So they're interested in lotto.
And that's a good way to lose whatever little power you have. Or the casinos. You have to look in the casinos and wonder why they're so wealthy. And it's because they don't lose.
Or the stock exchange. Again, another way to possibly somehow double your power without magically.
So Lord Balaram and the gopis enjoyed transcendental pastimes together every night for 2 months. So this happened every night. Something happened. It wasn't the same thing, because there's always variety in the spiritual world. And time passed so quickly that all those nights appeared to be only one night. In the presence of Lord Balaram, so in Krishna's presence, all the time, or Balaram's presence, even though it was a long period of time, they passed like a moment. And without Krishna's presence for the residents of Vrindavan, even a moment appeared to be like yugas. In the presence of Lord Balaram, all the gopis and other inhabitants of Vrindavan became as cheerful as they had been before in the presence of both brothers, Lord Krishna and Lord Balaram. Jai Lord Balaram ki jai.
I could not understand the concept of Balaram and his gopis. Somehow finding it hard to.
Yeah. What part do you find hard to understand?
I thought that all the gopis were meant for the enjoyment of Krishna. Now suddenly Balaram is coming to picture. It's confusing.
All gopis are different girls. They're not the same gopis.
Both Balaram and Krishna were in Vrindavan. Then all the gopis would be attracted to Krishna. Why would they be attracted to Balaram?
Some may.
So.
Because he has his potencies. It's not like Balaram is. We on one level we say Balaram, Krishna is the supreme, and Balaram is. But he's unlimitedly powerful. He's also unlimitedly powerful, unlimitedly beautiful, unlimitedly wealthy. look what he did, he's omnipotent. He pulled the Yamuna, and the Yamuna prayed to him in such a wonderful way. So, say if Balaram, as an expansion of Krishna, wanted to have gopis, because he's also the Supreme Person. Now why shouldn't he have gopis? So you're saying that all gopis should be attracted to Krishna, not to Balaram. But he has gopis that are meant to give him pleasure.
So he gave the message to Krishna's gopis, and then he danced with his own gopis.
That's what it appears. It's so hard for us to accept that Krishna has gopis. Now we have to also accept that Balaram has gopis too, and different gopis. But there are certain living entities that, like, there are certain living entities who have an eternal relationship with Ram. Hanuman being the best example. He has no interest in serving Lord Narayan. His relationship, he's constructed as a servant of Ram. So in the same way, you know that, yes?
Yes, yes.
So even though he knows that Lord Ram and Krishna or Lord Narayan are the same, still he has a relationship with Ram, not with Lord Narayan. So why couldn't there be some gopis who just have a relationship with Krishna? And even though we could say Lord Narayan is superior than Ram, but Lord Ram is unlimitedly attractive, unlimitedly powerful. So why can't certain living entities, this is the individuality, there are certain souls in Vaikuntha. There are certain souls who want to serve as cowherd boys. So we say that we know that the Madhurya Ras is the highest. So how could it be that they wouldn't be attracted to that? It's because this is their nature. This is what satisfies them. So there are certain souls who are meant to be in Vaikuntha. Certain souls meant to be in Goloka. There are different rasas, because otherwise there would only be one rasa instead of four or five rasas. What do you think? So it makes sense, but...
Yeah, it does, yeah.
But
only Vishnu Tattva. So as long as it is Vishnu Tattva,
yeah,
you can have any rasa, any of five rasas.
Yeah, whatever will satisfy you.
You can have five rasas with Vishnu Tattva.
Yeah, right. But there were two concepts put into that. Vishnu Tattva is worshipable, fully worshipable. So you can have your relationship with him, and your relationship, and that's acceptable. And within that, there are five rasas. But of course, some of them are only with Krishna, because they're more intimate than with Vishnu, than Vishnu allows. Is that? But then we also heard that Manasura, you remember the benediction that he was given by Krishna? Mm. That he could be an eternal servant of Lord Shiva.
Yeah.
But that we accept also, because Lord Shiva is also a devotee. But that's what he wanted.
Lord Shiva has his own place in Vaikuntha, spiritual sky.
Yeah. But out of the material sky.
There are different manifestations, different forms of Lord Shiva. Mm. In terms of there's Sada Shiva, in terms of the eternal form of Lord Shiva. And then there's Lord Shiva when he's at Kailash, with the actual Sada. Where he appears in the other, in the Sada Shiva, he's beautiful like a Vishnu form. According to some devotees, one precedence or something like that.
It's got to do with the individuality of the soul. What will satisfy him? Yeah.
I'm just saying we can try to understand if we think of, we have, say, a temple of Krishna Balaram here in this world, we're worshipping Krishna Balaram, group of devotees, group of pujaris, often it says, some may be attracted to Balaram, just like to dress them and like to sit. They just have, of course, they love Krishna. They love Krishna Balaram, but they just have in their heart an attraction to.
This is wonderful. This is the individuality of the soul.
The Balaram's position is that when they go into the forest, even Krishna will press his, feet.
Mm.
So, if we understand that, then it's easier for us to sort of link into the consciousness of how this is happening. If he is worshipable for Krishna, then he is not less entity.
But what causes one living entity, one individual, to want to worship one form of God or another? And we know devotees who there are some devotees who prefer Sakiras, even in ISKCON. Over Madhuras. They prefer it. This is just their individuality. This is what they are. This is who they are.
And they say that Sakiras is the best. They don't say it in a tattvic form, in an argumentative form, but to them, Sakiras
is so one best. Goes to what one will eventually end up with, exactly what will satisfy.
You follow your taste. And you sit down for prasadam and you follow your taste.
What is the position of Lord Shiva? As Madhavi said, Lord Shiva also has his permanent abode, Sada Sadashiv.
But generally, Lord Shiva he's in relationship with the material world. His existence is in relationship with the material world. He's the predominating deity, the guna avatar of tamaguna, and worshipping and making sure that living entities have a proper false ego. and he's in charge of the destruction. And he is the, in the form of Shambhu, he's the glance of Lord Vishnu over into the material energy. And that glance of Lord Vishnu is Sadashiva. So he's a tattva that's of course very difficult to understand because he's not quite material and he's not spiritual, fully spiritual. But so he's compared to yogurt in the Brahma Samhita as opposed to milk. So yogurt is transformed milk. You can't say that yogurt isn't milk, but you can't say that yogurt is milk. So, in the Vaishnava theology, he's worshipped always and respected, but for his role in service to Krishna. So he's not Vishnu Tattva, but he's Shiva Tattva.
Mm-hmm.
And he's not Jiva Tattva, but he's Shiva Tattva, something
special.
Something in his own category. He has his own category of Lord Shiva.
Can Shiva grant liberation?
Yes. And he can also grant devotional service. And he can also bring you into Braja by his mercy. And he can even bring you into to Madhurya Rasa, dancing with Krishna by his mercy, as Gopeshwar Mahadev.
But I thought that only Vishnu Tattva can grant liberation.
But he's a great devotee. So the devotees of Vishnu even more kind than Vishnu, because the Lord listens to them. But he's considered in Vrindavan, he's considered the the guardian of the rasa, yes, rasa area. Gopishwar Mahadev. But as a devotee. So he's not worshipped as an independent supreme personality of Godhead, but he's worshipped as a devotee of the Lord. One time when Prabhupada was in Hong Kong, the local, we were friendly with the local, on the other side there was a Hindu temple, and they invited Prabhupada to come to the Hindu temple. So Prabhupada asked me if he should go. And I said, no, Prabhupada, they just worship Lord Shiva there. And he became angry at me. He said, and you tell them not to worship Lord Shiva? I said, no. I said, but they worship him as the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And he said, oh, then I don't want to go. But it was so innocent in the way he said that, like,
Did he go?
No, he didn't go.
Mm-hmm. So the devotees of Lord Shiva, so whoever...
It depends on their consciousness too, what they're like, because nowadays the devotees of Lord Shiva, they're mostly impersonalists. Yes. And they don't really believe in Lord Shiva either.
Yes.
They believe in impersonal. So they worship Lord Shiva because he's asatosha, so that they can get what they want because he's easily pleased, so that they can get what they want in this world. So he's very popular. And also, yeah. But also, I think we have to end now because it's getting late. But tomorrow we'll speak about something else. We might go right on with this. So Lord Shiva means so auspicious, so glorious. Great offense to be disrespectful to Lord Shiva. We heard just recently of when Lord Shiva, that Banasura was a devotee of Lord Shiva, and he was protecting his city of Sonitapur. And when Krishna came, Lord Shiva fought with him, with all his men, and he sent his weapon, the Shivadra-jara, and Krishna's Narayan-jara, fought with it. And he was successful. And the Shivadra came and prayed to Krishna, and then finally even Lord Shiva came and prayed to Krishna on behalf of Banasura. So he's a devotee. Vaishnavanam Yata Shambhu from the Bhagavatam, 12th canto of the Bhagavatam. He's the greatest devotee. Is that okay?
Yes. I want to like listen to all this all night.
Could you loan him your tape recorder?
We have a couple of mattresses here we can pop them in.
Do you go to work tomorrow?
Yes.
Oh, but you'd like to. How nice. That means you're getting some special mercy from Gopinath.
Yeah.
That's what it means. It brings satisfaction. Krishna Katha brings satisfaction to the heart. Well, watching television brings misery to the heart. And listening to all the gossip people say and all the distress, distress and tension. You know, no happiness. There's the hope of happiness. No happiness comes. You're lucky. Mataji, do you also like to hear? Very good.
Otherwise they will be fighting with each other. If he pulls that side, or she pulls that side. Yeah.
Karna also likes to hear. Something about Krishna. Krishna, Leela, and Linda, they've been hearing from.
You have to learn the music.
No.
There you go. It's called Mamata.
Good night, Hari.
Do you have a full tape recorder, Jackie Tana? You have an MP3 player with everything on it?
Yes.
What do you have?
Well, I've just got all the...